Welcome to Fermentality. This episode's guest is Pablo Gomez with White Labs Liquid Yeast. And we are currently at the White Labs Brewing Company Kitchen and Tap in Asheville, North Carolina. Also on this episode is Christy Neidstedt, the owner of Raleigh Brewing Company, ABS Commercial, and Atlantic Brew Supply. I hope you guys really enjoy this episode as it is a merging of both commercial brewing and home brewing. So, Christy, why don't you introduce yourself and tell us how you got into the beer industry?
Hello, very excited to be here today. My name is Christy Neistad, and also, as Kat mentioned, the owner of a commercial brewing company, Raleigh Brewing, ABS Commercial Brewing Equipment, and Atlantic Brew Supply. So the commercial brewing equipment company came from basically a need in the industry. There was not a lot of equipment companies that were out there right around that time, and we brought stock equipment to the industry that wasn't available prior to that. Prior to ABS Commercial, they had to wait about 12 to 14 weeks for just a fermentation tank, and that's something that in the brewing industry you need pretty quickly. And Raleigh needed a very local brewery, so we created Raleigh Brewing Company, 20 barrel production brewery. We're now at about 7,000 barrels per year and growing. So three tap rooms, and we use White Labs in both our brewery as well as in our homebrew supply company. So we're excited to be here today with Pablo.
Absolutely. Hey, Pablo, why don't you tell us a little bit about what you do with White Labs and also how you started in the beer industry?
Yes. Hi. Thanks for having me on your podcast. I started, it's been probably my first batch of beer as a home brewer was probably 20 years ago-ish. Oh my God. And I fell in love and started brewing a lot. And I wanted to work for the industry no matter how. And so I started one of my first jobs, but it was more like freelance. I was working for the Cicerone program. I helped them kind of like translating some of their programs in Spanish. And I did some work for the BA, working for the Zymergy magazine, which is
Zymergy is huge.
Yeah, so I was kind of for a moment to like basically COVID hit. I was the Spanish editor for the magazine, and that's kind of how it started. But then, you know, I always got into fermentation. Was my favorite side of things. You know, when brewing the cold side, it was like where I was very interested. So when I moved to Asheville, I got the opportunity with White Labs, and I didn't think twice.
Excellent, excellent. So, what do you do with White Labs right now?
My title is technical account manager, so I basically, you know, represent the company, traveling a lot, you know, assisting conferences. Sometimes I give talks, visiting breweries.
Or homebrew shops where you've done talks
well
before.
Too. But also at the same time, because of the technical side of the title, I help when customers call asking questions about something. Most of the time is something wrong, right? That's otherwise they would not call you because I have got stuck fermentation or they have an issue. So I try to help them, you know, when anything, you know, to, you know, save the beer or whatever it is, you know.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that's a really crucial job to have for this industry, especially. You know, I feel like no matter where you are in this industry, you're constantly learning, and to be able to have a resource that they can reach out to. With White Labs that can provide you with that type of information when you do have issues, that's incredible. And you are definitely a resource in that sense to the industry. So White Labs, speaking of which, has been an industry standard yeast for quite a while. I mean, you know, there are obviously other yeast producers like Y Yeast and, you know, Imperial and all of that jazz. But it's both for homebrew and obviously commercial brewing. Can you tell us a little bit about how White Labs got started and how long y'all have been in business?
Yeah, sure. I think it's going to be almost 30 years. Like it was 1995 when Chris White, our CEO, founder, he was pursuing a PhD in biochemistry in UC Davis. And he moved to San Diego where he started homebrewing, and he got very hooked, right, with home brewing. So that's how basically Wild Lab started. And he went to the local homebrew shop, Homebrew Mart, which is still there, and met the owners. And so there's, you know, at the time was there was some liquid yeast, but very minimal, and mostly dry yeast and pretty terrible dry yeast. Now I think it got much better, you know. So they asked him, you know, with his knowledge, you know, what he was studying, you know, chemistry and stuff, he can do anything, like, you know, start propagating liquid yeast. And that's how Wild Lab started. What it was very interesting is that those two guys at the same time, and they were like kind of teach him how to brew, and they were like started using his product. They were like developing recipes because they wanted to open a brewery. They ended up opening Ballast Point.
Oh, okay.
Right, so being at the right place at the right time, right?
Oh, for sure. Light Labs, right?
Yeah,
at Ballast Point.
Yeah, so both companies kind of like grew together. Yeah,
that's awesome.
But very, very humble beginnings. Lisa White, she told me a story about like our first customer in San Diego was Peak Support, which is pretty cool brewery. And she was telling me the story about like trading yeast for pizza in the parking lot at the beginning. yeah, but you know, really cool stories.
So started out in commercial brewing then.
Started in homebrew.
Homebrew.
So the first batch was at Homebrew Mart.
Okay, gotcha.
And these guys were like, I think the story is like, he made some sort of like vials. There was WP001 California Ale, and on the first weekend, disappeared. Basically, what Chris did and was big at the time is you could find liquid yeast at the time,
right?
But it was not concentrated enough, so you needed to do some sort of propagation or starters, right? And so what Chris saw, and I think what made Wild Lab big from the beginning and the innovation part of things, is like he basically created the first pitchable liquid yeast. Like you didn't need to grow it; you just buy it and just add it, and that's it. You didn't have to be growing it in order to...
Yeah, and you didn't have to measure anything out. It was automatically just right there.
So that was big. So that caught the attention of the pro, and that's when he started like, okay, maybe there's something going on here.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, especially when, you know, the majority of homebrewers at that time were, you know, already just doing like the 5-gallon batches.
Right.
You know, like to be able to make something that was just for like the standard like 5-gallon batch. That's huge.
Yeah.
So we are currently at the Asheville location, Kitchen and Tap. The Asheville location of White Labs is special for multiple reasons. Why don't you tell us a little bit more about what makes this specific location so special?
Sure. I think all our three locations, we have San Diego in California, we have Copenhagen, Denmark, and Asheville, North Carolina. I think they all have something special. But since we're here, and that's where I live and work mostly when I'm not on the road, I think what's special about Asheville is because, let's say, San Diego grew with the company, right? When they work on, you know, opening Asheville, they had a vision, right? So they, like, work, they built it in a way of, like, what they wanted. And it's actually what's happening with making great yeast. We brewing beer, we making food related with yeast, right? Like in the tap room, we have our pizza doughs are made with liquid yeast, with brewer's yeast, which is not very common. For example, we have, I'm thinking out loud about a menu. Like, for example, our like fries have lactobacillus brine.
Oh, of course, right? You have to.
So, you know, stuff like that, and they're like related food, you know, beverage, and, you know, yeast, and I think that's great. Actually, a few days ago, I was here, and they were doing, our R&D chef was working on, we did like some sort of like blind, like triangle test of different doughs made with different, we play a lot with different blends of, or like different cultures, to see if we can find get more and more flavor out of our dough, right? So I think that's what happened a lot in throughout history. Like, people want fast. And that's when, you know, active dry yeast was like super huge. But, you know, fast, that's an equal
good
flavor. Flavor,
yeah.
Right? We're into flavors. That's big for us, flavors. So we keep on, even though we're pretty happy with what we use, it's no secret, we use a Kvike strain. But we're still working on like trying to make it better and better and better.
That's, I was told I need to bring back some of the Kokomo salt. Is that what it's called? Just salt?
Yeah.
So that's something that apparently.
Yeah, because it's very interesting. Like yeast, if you basically, I'm not gonna go too much detail, but if you basically cook yeast, unfortunately, it's kind of sad, but it's kind of like all the enzymes, everything exploded. You know, all these enzymes, the cells. Kind of like create this umami flavor. It's called autolysis.
Ooh.
And that's what it's...
Yeast death.
Exactly. So it's kind of like yeast extract or yeast like for food, right? Like people
Gives you kind of like a soy sauce flavor.
Exactly.
When it happens.
Umami,
so
exactly.
If you have a poor fermentation, it can actually infect your beer.
Oh.
So that's why beer, like one of the few fermented beverages that you can actually get an umami flavor with.
Mm-hmm.
So...
Yeah, and it's crazy because I then also tried it myself, and I love steak. I'm from Argentina. So, but I've done some try with this regular salt and this salt, and it's amazing the difference because it brings up even more of the meaty flavors.
Yeah, I remember it was my daughter that asked me to bring some back, and she's like, it's perfect on a tuna salt.
Ooh.
Yeah. So.
Okay. All right. Now I'm going to have to get some too.
Yeah.
So. Cool. So another one of the things that you guys do here that, especially as I was studying for Certified Cicerone.
Mm-hmm.
So when I was studying for Certified Cicerone and doing the sensory analysis training and all of that jazz, I was actually up here one weekend and, you know, we were talking about this before. The last time I was here was the day that I got engaged. But we ended up getting a flight of two different beers.
Mm-hmm.
But each of them, technically it was four different beers because it was two beers with the same wort, but different yeast.
Oh, yeah.
And it was really cool to be able to have the experience of trying out the different yeast flavors in the same wort. What made you guys decide to do that?
Good question. We wanted to showcase yeast and the importance of yeast in fermentation and the final product, right? Flavors, right? And sometimes people can't believe it. You know, basically, so, you know, people understand better. Like, we make one batch of beer, let's say IPA, but instead of sending all that wort into one fermenter, we split it. And then in one, we add, let's say, California WPO1 California, and then the other one WPO66 London Fog, which is like for hazes.
Oh yeah.
So everything is the same word, same everything except the yeast. And then people can't believe it that when they serve it side by side, that one is hazy, that one's super clear.
They look a completely
one
different
smells
beer.
Super fruity. The other one smells like, so it's amazing how the impact of yeast. So that's why we started kind of brewing, and then you know we kept it going.
Yeah, I know at Raleigh Brewing we carry like three strains of yeasts that on a continuous basis. But what do you think the biggest risk for a commercial brewer is? If they have just like one house strain that they're using in multiple beers?
It's a challenge, I guess, because there are strains, and for example, you can use maybe WPO1 California Ale if you're going to make a porter, a stout, and West Coast IPA and a blonde ale, right? You have four different styles with that. Now, when you come with a hazy, O1 is not going to make it. Right.
You're going to have to put in a lot of lactose, of flavor.
So you need some specific strains. You don't need to have eight different strains at a brewery.
Right.
Sometimes it's difficult to manage that. But, you know, three, four, up to four, maybe five different strains can work, right? Because, if you want to make a good Kolsch,
right.
You need a Kolsch yeast.
Oh,
if you want to make a good Hefeweizen, a German style, you need the Hefeweizen strain. you can't pull that off with any other strain. So, you know, I like Wanda's, you know, Kali is my favorite in terms of clean, you know, beers. But for example, WP007, the dry English, I think is a great strain if you want to play a little bit with flavors too, because it has an attribute that you, if you can ferment it at lower temperature, a little, you know, lower temperature, like I'm saying 65, 66 degrees Fahrenheit, it would be pretty clean. But the same strain, you ferment it at 68, 69.
It stresses it out more. The flavor comes through.
Yeah. Starts like showing more this English character.
Yeah.
So speaking of WLP007, I've always wanted to ask this. Did you guys do it on purpose with 007, meaning being the dry English strain for
James Bond?
James Bond, yeah. Because like you think of dry martini and that's his thing.
I'm not sure. I haven't really asked, but
Adele had to do it on purpose.
I think you just need to create that story.
That's how I remember that strain is 007. I think of James Bond, and it's the dry English strain, and I think I'm dry martini. You know, shaken, not stirred.
Yeah. Can't confirm, but I probably it is.
Can't confirm, but also would not deny.
I don't think it's a secret.
Epi told us he might have to kill us, maybe. Yeah. Oh, there you go.
So White Labs has changed their packaging a few times over the years and recently released the Pure Pitch Next Generation packaging. Can you tell us a little bit about the packaging and the benefits that come with it?
Sure. We make really good yeast, and, you know, like with everything, it's, you know, same as beer, right? Like you make great beer and then everything can get... Things can get complicated if you don't have a good package, right? Like,
for sure.
So, you know, you can mess up a lot, you know, like in beer,
especially
right? Like
sanitation.
Can have like an oxidation. So packaging is so important. But, you know, we wanted, first of all, we added a cap right now. So it's more convenient for brewers or brewers, professional brewers as
Instead of having to sanitize your scissors and cut the package.
But I think most importantly, we added a lot of technology in the film we use. And one thing that it's very important to understand is like yeast, slowly but surely, even though you keep it at cold temperatures, it's going to start like yeast when it goes into hibernation, let's say, has a sugar, reserve sugar, and then uses while it's hibernating so it can survive. There's no food around, right? So the reason of keeping it really cold is so yeast can be as less active as possible, so consuming the sugar little by little. But they're going to be doing it anyway.
Right.
Right? And when they do that and there's some minimal fermentation, they get CO2 production. So if the good thing about our films is that they're like thin enough, then they can release the CO2, out.
That would explain why yours don't puff up.
Exactly. Good point. And, you know, I know people don't like changing. They're like, why are you changing stuff? I'm like, believe me, this is for good. So but that's the thing. Like what it means. It means that now our yeast is going to be better for longer than any other yeast out there, right? Like, there's some other, materials and which just like start building and building up, and CO2 buildup will affect the yeast health.
I mean, Kat, you were concerned when they changed the packaging, but from a homebrew management perspective, what have you noticed in the store with consumers?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I was a little concerned when the packaging changed because the price went up a little bit from it, you know, and homebrewers are inherently frugal. You know, they have no problem with making a starter because it's going to save them money.
Yeah.
But in the same breath, though, you know, consumers received it really well.
Okay.
One of the things that they really like about it, too, is that it has that QR code on the back.
Yeah.
And you scan that QR code on the back and you can not only see like hundreds of recipes for each individual yeast strain, but you can also learn more about not just that type of yeast and what it's going, the flavors it's going to produce and the way that it's going to react and, you know, the viability and the health of it. But you can also learn about that very specific batch,
yeah,
which, you know, a lot of homebrewers have really appreciated. And, you know, I think people also really like the screw top. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah.
As far as like a homebrew shop that carries it, I like the fact that it's easier to store.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
It's a lot easier to carry more strains because it takes up less space. And as a result, we have more of a variety of yeast to provide to our customers. So it's been received really well.
That's great. That's great. Yeah, that's what the whole idea. Like, we wanted to give brewers more yeast, and you know, the, so they can brew better beers, and also have the packaging that it's keeping the yeast as healthy as possible, as long as possible.
Yeah. Another thing too is like we ship all throughout the United States, all through the continental United States for home brewers. And one of the benefits of the new packaging is the fact that it does have a lot more cell count to it, and it can last a lot longer than other yeast. Yep. So as a result, when we package it from, you know, North Carolina out west, we know that as long as it stays cool, that yeast is going to be viable by the time it hits the customer. Even with the amount of craziness that, you know, couriers will generally pull. I mean, you know, love our couriers and thank God for USPS. But, you know, there are times where sometimes things get delayed, and that is a major concern when shipping out liquid yeast. So to know that White Labs is creating a packaging that is going to assist the you know, storefronts and our e-commerce teams for homebrew is really beneficial.
Yeah.
I need a beer.
You need a beer. Go get a beer.
You want a beer?
Sure.
You want a pour beer?
So cool story. Aaron, who is the technical brewer for White Labs in Asheville, actually happened to come and join us for a beer. So while Aaron is here and she is interrupting our regularly scheduled program, I want to take this opportunity to introduce Aaron, or have Aaron introduce herself and talk to us a little bit about what you do here with White Labs and why you enjoy working here.
Of course. Thank you for having me, by the way. Sorry to interrupt, but
no, absolutely.
Too late. Too late now.
Too late.
I love spontaneous.
All about
spontaneity. Here we go.
So yeah, I've been working for White Labs for about 3.5 years. I'm the technical brewer. For the last 6 months, I've just been setting up our new system. So we brought a 30-hectoliter system online in June. So I've been dialing in the prop wort recipe, which has been fascinating. I think my favorite thing about brewing for White Labs is we get down to the nitty gritty.
Hell yeah.
Extremely technical. So many QC checkpoints, so many QA checkpoints. It's been an amazing learning experience. So
how did you get into beer, and how did you end up at White Labs?
I started brewing in Charleston, South Carolina, in about 2016. Cleaning kegs.
No, that's totally fine. Hey, that, I mean, you know, that's part of the beer industry. It's a needed job.
So I work for two smaller breweries. Shout out Tradesman and Frothy Beard. And I decided I wanted to learn more about science. So I applied for a job here, and they hired me. So I was like, you're moving to Asheville.
Oh, that's completely different. Charleston down at the beach.
Yeah, exactly.
The mountains. Do you prefer like colder weather now that you've lived here, or do you still prefer warmer weather?
I still prefer warmer weather. But I will say the weather's not that bad here. It's actually, we have four seasons. It's beautiful. It's definitely very nice. So
awesome. What is it, the most exciting like project that you've worked on here at White Labs so far?
I think the most exciting project that I've worked on, too, dialing in the prop wort recipe with Kara Taylor, who's my boss, she's our head of operations, has been really cool. That's going to be ongoing for a long time. The second one would be a CIP optimization project that I started in January of last year. I learned a lot about our system, about our process piping, about the math that goes into that. And that is also still ongoing, so still learning.
Well, you know, now that you guys, now that you have a relationship with us, feel free to call us anytime. We're
I will definitely take you up on that.
Yeah. ABS Commercial is all about that.
I would love to.
I think that it's really cool that you're, you said Director of Operations is the person you were working with?
Kara is Kara. Director of Operations, yeah.
So I think it's really cool that we have a technical brewer and a Director of Operations that are both women here kicking ass. That's like awesome.
Actually, our VP of Operations, Neva Parker, is also a female.
Oh,
yeah.
That is awesome.
There's so many females in our lives.
My boss is a woman, Katie.
So that's really, really cool to be able to come to a space that is so empowering of other women in the industry.
Yeah.
So if you, I'm going to ask you two more questions while you're here. My first question is, what is a beer that you have brewed that you are particularly proud of?
So that is a good question here. I brewed the first beer here 6 months ago. We just brewed our second beer here. On Tuesday. I think the beer that I'm most proud of was a batch of Sip Pass at Frothy Beard, where I used to work. And we really nailed that batch. And I remember going through the notes with my boss at the time, owner Joey Signolfi. And start to finish, it was definitely like one of the better batches that we brewed. It's a hazy IPA. It's still one of their big sellers, yeah. But I'm excited to get the brewing program off the ground over here, for sure.
Heck yeah. So my second question for you, and this one always stumps people, but it's always the last question that I ask anybody in this podcast, is if you were a beer, what beer would you be and why?
Yeah, that does. I mean, maybe like, I don't know. I like to be difficult. Maybe a barley wine.
Oh, no one said that so far.
Yeah, I like to be complicated.
Yeah. Awesome. Yeah, and a barley wine is difficult to pair with other than a bonfire, which hopefully will keep you warm while you're living up here in the...
I can live with that.
Don't limit jokes on
that. I know. I can't believe I just said that.
Awesome. Well, Erin, thank you so much for stopping in and bringing some spontaneity to this episode.
Of course. Again, thank you guys for having me.
Absolutely. So, Pablo, White Labs has also released a couple of dry yeast packaging for homebrewers. What dry yeast have y'all released so far? And are there any other strains in the pipeline that we can look forward to?
Sure, yeah. So far, we have released two, WP001 California Ale Dry and WP066 London Fog Dry. We're working on a third one, which is a lager. It's going to be Munich lager. And yeah, so far those are the three we're going to have. We'll see, you know, the reason we started doing dry is because, you know, some people are asking, some people prefer using dry, but they love some of our strains and they were like, oh, how do I do if I like, for whatever reason, they like, you know, dry, how do I use Cali? And now they can't, right? So, but we've been seeing a lot of, like, people, like, even pro brewers, like, you keep using liquid, but saving a few and buying a few of those bricks of dry just in case something wrong happened, right? And then I need yeast right now so they can save the day and get some of those. So I think it's going to work in really good.
Yeah. Yeah, I know a lot of the homebrewers, at least in the Raleigh area where we are located, have been super excited to be able to have dry options of WLP001.
Yeah,
it's a lot easier to use, especially if you're first starting out. And people, you know, they look at WLP001 as, you know, that just a standard strain that they can use for just about whatever. So
because many people were using, without saying any numbers or any other companies, they were using comparables, right? Kind of like to have some sort of like West Coast. But if you want the classic West Coast, it's California ale, so that's the cool part. Then, you know, if they prefer to use dry, they can now have Cali.
Yeah, it's like you can try to replicate White Labs, but
yeah, you can't
actually have it until you're using it.
Yeah, exactly. For sure, yeah. For sure. Yeah. And it, I mean, you know, Sapel USO5, right? Like, that one is a dry yeast that people have been using for years. It's just your, like, standard, like, clean yeast. To be able to have, like, another, like, beast of a yeast come in, you know, in a dry form.
That's good.
Yeah. I love the beast of a yeast.
That's a good context right there, yeah.
Yeah. So to have another, like, beast of a yeast in a dry form is incredibly beneficial to these homebrewers that are first starting out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Speaking of homebrewing, you're very knowledgeable about pitch rates specifically. What advice do you have for homebrewers looking to make the perfect pitch?
I would say use a calculator. And homebrewers love to use calculators, right? Like,
oh, I do, because I'm horrible at math.
Super geeky, right? Super geeky. The like. But one thing I want to mention, I think it's important. There's so many calculators out there that they're like working really good, but and we're going back to when we talk about our packaging,
right?
So some of those calculators out there, they're not updated because they're like from many, many years ago when packagings were different. I'm talking about Wild Labs. I don't know about the labs, but everything was different. So now some of these calculators, for example, if you put, it asks you for the best day or something, right? And if you type X number, basically it will tell you that a yeast that it's a month old is like 70% viable. That's why you might need three packs or three pouches, whatever it is. And we prove that that's not the case with wine apps on this, right? That's why I was explaining before, you know, about the technology in our or packaging. So that's the thing that's a little off on those calculators. But when it comes to just cell count, it won't trade. I would recommend them by using Wild Labs to use our calculator on yeastman.com. You go to our calculator, and that's specifically based on all our data. We worked many years. I was part of that team to work on that calculator. We put a lot of effort on that, and it works really good. You know, you can actually see not only how many pouches we recommend, but you see the total amount of cells per milliliter, total amount of cells per milliliter per liquid plato. You know, we bring in some of this kind of like the prosite way of talking into homebrew, and I think and I think that's important. So
I 100%, you know, appreciate the fact that White Labs has that type of calculator, because there are times where, you know, you have these homebrewers that have been brewing since the 80s that come in and, you know, they...
Homebrew clubs.
Yeah, the homebrew clubs and all.
Yeah, exactly.
But they come in and they're like, oh, give me your newest yeast. But that really creates a problem, you know, and I'm just, you know, saying this so that way people hopefully understand why that creates issues. It's first in, first out. It's just like at the grocery store where you go into the grocery store and you see products on the shelf. Let's say it's cheese. Right, I'm getting shredded mozzarella. The shredded mozzarella that's on the back is the newest, and the one that's in the front is, you know, older, but it's still viable to use, right? So to essentially have a calculator to explain to homebrewers that, yes, this yeast is a month old, but our technology has significantly improved, you can still use this for another 3 months, you know, or, you know, whatever it may be at that point, maybe not 3 months, but, you know, point remains the same, to be able to have a calculator that essentially I can provide to my customers and say, hey, you know, I know that you're looking for something that's like as new as possible, but here is this calculator and the research behind it to show you why this yeast is still viable and can absolutely be used.
And probably not all yeast providers have their own yeast calculator, right? So, I mean, that's also good to know. Like, White Labs has very distinctive products that help you manage how that is going to
add. And not only that, if you want to go even more geeky.
Yeah.
Well, we love nerds.
That calculator, the Wild Labs calculator, It will give you the what we recommend.
Yeah.
But there's an advanced option that if you click that, then you go to another page where you have some sort of, we call it pitching slider.
And
so now you can go up and down and choose your own pitch rate. Mm. And that will tell you, oh, okay, we'd say we recommend one pouch. We'll say, okay, no, but that pitch rate is too low. I want more because whatever. You can go up and they will tell you, oh, 1.5 or 2 or whatever. And you choose by your cell count, by your pitch rate. And that's the good thing also about this Pure Pitch Next Generation is that, you know, now having the cap, they can use partial pitches. And
for sure.
And then you know, keep it in the coolant.
Yeah, and that's really beneficial too, because if somebody decides that they want to pitch less to really express that yeast and stress it out a little bit more, they can use that slider to say, okay, I'm going to be safe enough. This is the lowest that I can go to allow the yeast to still be able to create alcohol.
So, yeah. And again, the shelf life, it's really good with the new technology we're talking about.
For sure.
You know, that's why these other calculators don't take that into consideration. Of course, you know, they don't, it's, you know, it's data that they don't have. So, yeah, that's important for homebrewers to understand that, you know, all that, it's part of what we offer it.
So, Pablo, you travel a lot for White Labs. In your experience, what are some of the must-visit beer towns or even countries that beer enthusiasts should be looking out for?
Of course, Asheville.
For sure.
I think San Diego is great too, right? With beers and stuff. I was in Cincinnati last week, and you know, I think it's an under
Cincinnati.
Yeah.
Where?
I went different breweries. I went to Matry, Rheingeist.
Of course, yeah.
Even went to Sam Adams and stuff. And
what was the first one?
Matry.
Interesting.
It was, you know, and I tried beer. You know, I was at other bars, so I tried beer from different breweries. And, I was very impressed about the beers in that city. I think it's an underrated city.
For Cincinnati, Ohio.
Yeah. You close to Kentucky, just close, you know, cross the bridge, drinking bourbon.
Heck yeah. I am all about the bourbon. There is a yeast strain that homebrewers are currently sleeping on. What is that yeast strain, and why should homebrewers try it?
It's a good question. I think, if I can say something, is we have put together what we call White Labs Fermentation Society for brewers. And it's a program that they can enroll, and we just release new blends and stuff we've been doing. I think right now we have four. It's a Hansen blend. These guys are going to kill me. Hansen blend, Franken yeast blend. We have a Mythical Hammer, which is a blend for lagers. And we just released it. The last one is a Maranion Canyon, which is a strain that we found from cacao beans in Peru.
Oh.
It's kind of like for a saison type of thing. And so people can enroll in that and, you know, It's kind of like the old program, but revamped. Remember then they were like, just save the labels and stuff and then get prices. I don't know if you...
Oh, I remember that.
Okay, so it's exactly the same, but revamped. So now they can have access to some like different blends than we're doing specifically for them. And also... perhaps they had access to, you know, like email, you know, stuff we send. Sometimes we do Q&As with Chris White for people part of the program. They can still, like, save the labels or the pouches and then get prices, right? I think $5,000 and you brew with Chris.
Oh, wow.
How many people have brewed with Chris? How many people
did I think that happened a few times because I think they were like uniting forces. So I think it was like,
5,000 homebrews, yes, man.
People were like,
okay, Martin King, that's what you need to do now. Yeah,
like
people, with philosophy.
Like people, what they do is like, you know, for one homebrewer, it's going to be difficult. But, you know, homebrew clubs get together, maybe with a homebrew shop. Oh, they're like all brilliant. Put together and then get it. But there's some, besides that, there's so many other prices that are like pretty cool that we have.
Awesome.
You know, even the yeast book that Chris wrote and hats, T-shirts.
That's such a cool idea.
Yeah, I will like, it's also, you go to yeastman.com and you'll see all the information, or you just Google, you know, Wild Labs Fermentation Society, and it's very easy to enroll.
Very cool. I didn't even know that was a thing if you did like 5,000 brews, but yeah, doing it with somebody else. Yeah. Yeah. Total sensor. Like,
He'll show up and brew with you.
He should put that on as like a challenge in the Atlanta Brew Supply.
Yeah, I think yeah. Specifically.
I feel like between all the people in the triangle, you could probably.
Oh, heck yeah.
5,000 per
year. I mean, even so there's a really big homebrew competition in the triangle called Shamrock. Mm-hmm. And it generally happens right around March, you know, obviously for like St. Patrick's Day and all of that jazz. But Shamrock, I don't remember how many like entries they're allowing per year, but it's a massive homebrew competition. Yeah. And it's run by a Carboy Homebrew Club.
Uh-huh.
And if there's anybody that could, you know, do that, I definitely think
and that forces.
Yeah, that would be awesome.
100%.
So can you tell us a little bit more specifically about the WLP 618 NA All Day Yeast? You know, I have been so interested in learning how to make a non-alcoholic beer, yeah. But, you know.
It tastes good.
Yeah, it tastes good. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, but I have no idea even what to do with it. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. So basically, a strain for an NA beer is a strain of yeast that cannot, usually it's called maltose negative.
Okay.
So meaning that anything that is maltose or more complex maltotriose, whatever, it's, they can't ferment. So they only ferment glucose. Simple sugar, glucose, sucrose, fructose. So there are many different ones. The one NA All Day, it's called Saccharomyces luigi. It's a strain that it's pretty clean. We've done trials with different ones. It's pretty clean. It's very low in ethyl acetate, and some other strains can produce a lot of ethyl acetate. And ethyl acetate is a compound that, when it's produced in big amounts, smell like nail polish. So this is pretty clean and stuff. But what I would say is, and I think this is important for people, mostly for home brewers. They have to be careful with non-alcoholic beers, because what it makes safe a beer, it's alcohol.
Yeah,
you might not think about that.
It's the same next morning as the creation of alcohol. Yeah,
but what it makes a beer safe, it's alcohol. Besides pH. Okay, so. I want to be clear on that, because most of the NA beers out there commercially, their filtration equipment or their like a pasteurization equipment are bigger than any homebrewer's house.
Right.
Okay. So if you just want to make a normal, just pitch your yeast, like you making any beer any other day, you have to be careful about, you know, because that's what happened. You have minimal fermentation. Minimal. You have to reach 0.5 tops ABV. So that means that you have minimal fermentation. That means that probably your pH is not even going to drop that much. So you have to be, we have recipes, and then you can, you know, make sure that you actually add some sort of like acid, like phosphoric acid or lactic acid. So you drop the pH at least below 4.6, which is like food safe.
Right.
Safe, but still like, you know, still not alcohol. I'm a believer in alcohol being as a... So I'm not trying to scare anyone, but, you know, in a commercial way...
That's important.
You have to be extra careful, because if you do distribution, and if you're not pasteurizing, if you're not doing any filtration...
You make
what
people
do
sick.
What do you know what's going on, right? Kegging, you can contaminate beer. Think about this. Minimal fermentation, you have a lot of sugars.
That are going to be left over.
They're left over. So any other, even a pathogen can like go for those, then and you can get sick, right? So, and you can contaminate a beer if your draft lines are not cleaning properly. Which is very common.
Very easy.
You don't have to be a terrible brewery. No, it just happens. So I guess for home brewers, one thing that they have as an advantage compared to a commercial, it's then they can keep the beer cold at all times.
Yeah.
Right? There's no change. You don't have to be dealing with distributors. You don't have to be dealing with this or that. But still, I just want to say that. But it's doable. Just understand what you're doing. Don't just be blindly, I'm throwing this magic yeast and it's going to have NA beer. Everything's going to be fine. Just work on it. Be, you know, aware pH, be aware of like temperature, be aware of like drinking it as fast as possible. Just
work it. Sounds like a whole new episode of Fermentality, where we need to talk about how to.
I don't want to be scaring people about it.
I think it's super important, you know, especially since this is kind of some of the first time that yeast is being available.
Oh, for sure.
So, I mean,
there's so many, you know, yeast out there from NA beers, right? I think as a whole, we should be, you know, be
informed
more
and cognizant.
Exactly. Just like, you know, and I learned this also because many years ago when NA beers were not a thing, I tried one. I don't know why. I just like found this from Y Labs. Like we had this, strain, which is a little different. This one was still, and I'm gonna make an NA beer, and I fermented. It was barely a fermentation going on. And when I was about to try it, and I'm like, wait a minute. So I take a sample and check the pH, and it was still like a 5 or so.
It was an 8.
And I'm like, this thing's been sitting there for a week or so. Has less than 0.5% ABV. pH is still high.
Maybe not. Maybe let's not taste this.
Exactly.
Yeah. I'm like, I could add some, but again, I was like.
Did you try it?
No, I didn't. I could, no, at this point, you can also add some, you know.
Right. Some lactic acid or
something. And then drop it and stuff. But it was more like I was playing with some stuff. But, you know, I'm just saying that.
Be informed before you use it.
Right.
Exactly.
For sure.
You know, yeah.
Well, those are all good, really good concerns to consider.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, there is a massive influx of folks interested in going non-alcoholic or even just taking breaks that still want the taste of beer, you know.
Yeah. But what if safer way maybe doesn't taste really great, but you can make a beer and water it down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, what we do at Raleigh Brewing is we make a beer called Trace Amount,
It's like a 2% ABV.
I think it's like 1.3 or 1.6.
Yeah, 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 it's like less than 2%, but it is something that has, still has alcohol in it.
But it's not considered so NA beer.
Yeah, it's not an NA beer.
Right, it's a low alcohol.
It's a
that's
low
safer,
beer,
right?
Right. Yeah. Exactly. Because that's what we do is actually make alcohol beer.
Yeah, alcoholic beer, 100%.
We make beer with alcohol in it. So, I mean, it was, when we try to make NA beer, I was like, this is actually probably not going to be the best for us because we... Yeah, that's a lot to...
There's a lot more of a process that's incurred within that that project.
Yeah, and when my brewers brought that to my attention, I was like, let's just do something that's lower in ABV, still manages, it's not NA, so it's not going to fully contribute to that population, but at the end of the day, it will...
But the tap room also, like, offers a lot of other non-alcoholic options. So, like, we have kombucha and...
Which the isn't fully NA either.
No, it's not.
And if you see right now, like, even Sierra Nevada, I tried their NA beer. It's great.
Yeah.
NA IPA. And they're not going to keg it. You're not going to be able to get it on top. Yeah. It's going to be on cans because that's safe.
For sure. I mean, one of the things too, you know, like Raleigh Brewing makes this amazing root beer. Thanks, by the way, for introducing soda back into my life after I started working for Atlantic Brew Supply. You know, I was off of soda for like 2 years, and then that damn like root beer came into my life, and I said, I can't live without it.
Yeah.
But I mean, regardless of what you're doing when you're putting something into a tank, you know, if it's non-alcoholic, all of a sudden your sanitation and your attention to sanitation has to increase exponentially. So, yeah, I mean, regardless of what you're doing, if there's no fermentation, you have to be really careful. As a yeast expert, what is one piece of equipment that home brewers cannot live without, in your opinion?
When I started to pay more attention to the cold side, I think my beers got better. So I would say stainless steel fermenter. And some sort of like temperature control. And it doesn't have to be super expensive. I actually work on, my beers got much better. Like, you know, we all want this super cool like brewing system, like something that you can, but I'm telling you, it's not gonna make the difference in your beers if then you have all this coolness and then you go into a bucket.
Right.
So once I understood that, my homebrew went totally on the a different direction. Like my hot side equipment was like very bad. I was like pots and stuff, earning myself, but I didn't care. I was putting some money on my cold side. And that's what can make the difference, right? Stainless steel. So I just got a pretty cool stainless steel bucket. I never really reused yeast, even though before I left. Again, now I'm spoiled. I don't need to. But even before, I don't know. I'm a little different. I'm like,
so going,
if I'm going to have a hobby, I'm not going to be like driving myself crazy.
I want to have fun. Oh, for sure.
I'm going to have fun. I'm not going to be like harvesting forever. And I harvest a few times just to learn and understand. But most of the time, I was just getting fresh cheese all the time.
So speaking of harvesting, that was actually my next question. What is, you know, like if homebrewers decided that they wanted to harvest and propagate their yeast, what would you recommend doing? And maybe give us like a cheaper way of doing it and maybe like a little more expensive.
More expensive, I guess, is if you get a stainless steel bucket with a cone.
With a cone and a
cone at the bottom. So they can actually harvest. Cheaper, it's a little of a pain, but it's doable. There's some work you have to do. So basically, you just, when you transfer all the, let's say you're using a carboy, right? Or a bug, it doesn't matter. You are transferring all the beer into your kegs. You leave a little bit of beer on top of your yeast. And then you rouse that. So you create some sort of slurry.
So you stir it up.
Yeah. Just a little bit of beer on top.
With all of the sanitation.
Yeah. But then you move it to a different vessel, maybe anything, maybe something smaller. And could be a flask if you have or something.
A mason jar, maybe.
Yeah, I will go first to something a little bigger, depending, because unless you want to say just one mason jar is fine. But if you want to kind of, because you have a lot of yeast now.
Right.
So if you want to have several ones, I would say let's go, you can go to a 5-liter flask. Then homebrewers usually have stuff like that because they make starters.
Yeah.
They use the flask, the glass flask. So you add that slurry in there, you put it in the cooler, and what happened in a cone or everything, it's called stratification. So you start separating from true and everything. So you, after putting in a cooler for a day or so overnight, when you look at it, you're going to have some beer or some liquid on top. You're going to see very nice yeast in the middle, kind of creamy, and then you see a lot of true on the bottom.
So it's going to look like sedimentary rock.
Exactly. So now you can actually go to mason jars. So you decant a little bit of that liquid, and then you start adding that creamy yeast on your mason jars until you hit in the trub, and then you stop.
And you get rid of the trub.
Exactly. And then, again, you grab all those mason jars, put in your cooler, and you wait for another stratification. Now, there's not going to be a lot of trub.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be mostly a lot of liquid on top and then yeast at the bottom. And that's what you can use to repitch, you know, when you add going into it. It's hard to do the math how much you need, or I would recommend not keep it too long in the cooler because, that's, again, we talk about that yeast, no matter what, it's going to be dying slowly but surely. If you're going to use it right away, go for it. Just decant some of that liquid, rouse that created slurry and pitch it. If you're going to keep it a little too long, then I would recommend do a starter till you see the yeast is active or still alive.
Yeah, because the last thing you want to do is make a beer and not have it.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
That's why.
And you can use co-pitch, too.
I get it for commercial brewing, and we want commercial brewers to reuse yeast because our yeast is so cool and so good. And, when people say, I use White Labs and I use it only once and they threw it away, I'm like, what? It's crazy. We want people to reuse it. When it comes to, and brewers, you have a lot of equipment, right? You have yeast brings, you got this, you got that, you got a lot of stuff that you can do. When it comes to home brewers, I know that some home brewers are very serious. They have all the equipment too. But most of the time, they don't have all that. And I think it's more like a harm than a benefit. They can contaminate the yeast if they don't do the right cleaning and sanitation. So, I was always like, can I get another?
We're just gonna get him that.
I'm gonna pitch. Yeah, if I can't afford this, I'll start doing something else.
Yeah, I mean, commercial brewers definitely have the benefit.
Oh, it does make total sense.
Yeast brinks,
Yeah, and that makes sense.
Having a yeast brink and being able to just throw it into a walk-in cooler is a hell of a lot easier than sitting there and saying, all right, I got to boil my mason jars, or I got to boil my Erlenmeyer flask, and,
It's a little, it can get complicated, but it's not impossible. It's doable, and it's fine if they want to do it, but, they have to just be aware of that. That's it.
In the past, what is a beer that you have made that you are particularly proud of?
I would say I always been the biggest critic of my beer. So I will never let anyone try my beers if they were in my opinion, they were not great.
Right.
So I was always very particular on that. But I guess my best beer was a mistake.
Hey, I love that. I love that, though.
So I brew a Belgian triple, and I bottle it in 750s, because who wants to?
Bottling is my least favorite activity.
Yeah. So 750, I'm like, yeah, I'll drink the whole bottle. And I also, you know, I usually try not to bottle. I like to keg. But for some specific beers, like Belgian styles or like Saison and stuff, I think it makes a difference. I know CO2, but there's some sort of like the different type of CO2s, like maybe the bubbles are finer, maybe there's some sort of re-fermentation in the bottle. It makes a difference.
There's also just a classic, you know, feeling of opening a bottle and hearing it go, see it pouring out of it. It's classic. It's an experience, too.
So I brewed this beer. It was pretty good.
So what was it?
It was a Belgian triple.
It was a Belgian triple.
Hell yes, ma'am.
All right. But this is, but here comes a mistake. I thought I had drunk it all. because I kept the bottles in my basement. And a year or so later, I found a bottle that I missed. It's been sitting there full of beer for a year.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, oh, okay. I'm like, should be fine. It's triples at 8% beer. So I'm like, maybe develop better and stuff. When I opened, it was amazing. It was like it had bread.
I love. Okay, so that was definitely a mistake.
Wow. Yeah, but it was a double mistake. Yeah. Like I forgot a beer, then my bottle was not cleaned properly or sanitized properly, but it was perfect. I was drinking every little ounce. I was like, please don't ever finish. And it was just one bottle.
You know what?
And it was amazing.
You know what's funny? We actually had a guest on our episode. His name is Brett Jones.
Yeah.
Or on our podcast for an episode. His name is Brett Jones. And funny story, he loves Brett.
Yeah.
And he always says, like, when he comes into the homebrew shop and he's looking for a Brett strain, he says, yeah, I messed up another homebrew. It's not that great. I mean, it's okay, but I'm just going to add some Brett. For him, adding Brettomyces is his band-aid. Fix a beer that he messed up. And
unless it started tasting like Band-Aid. Oh,
yeah, for sure. Unless it started tasting like Band-Aid, right. Which is a phenol that we just don't want.
Right.
He came in and actually on this episode brought me some beers that he had inoculated with Brett. And he said that initial base beer was just not that great. And he brings this beer in with Brettomyces, and it's the most gorgeous beer that I've ever tried. You know, and so sometimes it is a happy mistake. I mean, that's how IPA ended up getting to India, is that by the time it had, you know, the way it was when it left Europe and then when it got to India was completely different because there was Brettomyces in the barrels. Mm-hmm. And so, it's interesting thinking about that. I mean, I love a good bread IPA. I just love any good breaded beer.
But again, I got lucky. It could have been terrible, right?
Oh,
it could
yeah,
be for sure. Something else that grew in there that it would make it vinegary or whatever. Again, always safe because it has alcohol.
Yeah.
Right? But it might not be...
It musty. Yeah.
Right? But this one, I got lucky. And it was a perfect amount of bread. And it was probably my best.
I do love a good Brett beer. I like anything that's just like funky and different though. Like that's where I really nerd out. My last question for you today, Pablo, is my favorite question to every guest. And it is, if you were a beer, what beer would you be and why?
Oh my God. It's not about who I am or what, maybe more of what I want to be, I would say a lambic.
Ooh, good choice.
Because it's kind of spontaneous and intriguing.
Is there a typical, a specific, like, fruited lambic that you would like to be, or just a straight lambic?
Just straightforward.
No friend blonde?
Straightforward, spontaneous, and, yeah, intriguing. I think that that would be great.
Excellent. Well, hey, Pablo, thank you so much for joining us with Fermentality on this episode. And Christy, thank you so much for joining me on this trip to Asheville and being a co-host today. Thank you guys so much for listening to Fermentality. This episode is brought to you by ABS Commercial. And we are so excited to get ready to start a new series of Fermentality called Fermentality Pro Series, where we interview people such as Pablo and Aaron about life as a pro in the beer industry. Thank you so much for listening.